It's gonna be a weird day, everyone. I just need you to prepare yourself for that. I'm John Arola. Today is Friday, and we've got so much Brett. Brett Ehrlich, how's it going?
One might even argue it's too much Brett.
Too much Brett, to Brett.
Brett, who has so much goop in his hair right now, and I am not talking Gwyneth, but I've got so much goop in my hair that I can smell it. It's like that goop that you get from Floyd's barbershop where it's like, this is mostly cologne.
I haven't been there in a very long time. But we're very glad to have you here. So I want to know though, what is happening today on the network? I mean, we'll get to what's happening in the next hour and a half, but what's happening today on the network?
Today on the network, I'll tell you everything. Here's what's on order. So the specials first, Brett Ehrlich on the damage report. Ensuing program, indisputable. You got Wozni Lambre, and then also Dr. Ritchie is gonna enter the bullpen and debate a conservative. Very awesome. That's right after this show. Right after that, it's Friday, gotta get down. I don't remember what's on after that.
Isn't it
Galaxy Brain? It's Galaxy Brain. I'm an idiot. Brain.
You live in Twitch. How do you not know?
I'm pretty sure it's Galaxy Brain. So after that, it's Galaxy Brain with Ben Carollo. You can see it on twitch.tv/TYT. Then The Conversation. You can watch that on the Young Turks channel. Right after that, we got a power panel with John Iderola, Cenk Uygur, Abilina Sabrina to talk about what you did to him with the purple hair.
Although it's, I think in the same way that every human rejects me with purple hair, the purple has rejected my body and is fleeing.
It's great. I wish you took a photo a day to see it receding, like the ice caps up to the top of your head or like little patches. Anyways, so there's that. And then second hour, Adrian Lawrence and J.R. Jackson join Cenk, which is a lot of J's. Sounds. And then bonus episode right after that, you got a half hour to do whatever you want. We'll probably host somebody. But then we got Common Room today where we're joined by Ravana and Ben Carollo. So we've got, and if John wants to jump in, he can, but I've only planned three so far just to hang out and have a good time. We're going to be answering such questions like, if you could ask everyone in America to do one thing, what would you ask them to do?
That's tough. Do you have an answer ready?
No,
we have to wait. You don't answer, you just ask.
Oh, okay. I did have an answer. I did have an answer.
Okay, let's throw that out to the audience. What would you have everyone do? And what you should do is watch Common Room to find out what everybody says. But thank you for that rundown of what's going on in the network, Brett. Much appreciated. What's going on here is that in just a moment, we're going to touch base with the pandemic. I have good news, a little bit. But I am going to make you deal with what's going on in Fox before you get that good news. Because there is some good stuff going on in Fox. Not much, but a little bit. Then we have a couple of amazing stories coming out of the Olympics, including, I think my favorite story of the week actually is an Olympic story. That's going to be coming up in just a bit. Along the way, we're going to talk about fires. They're everywhere. It's the new trend, things being on fire. And we've got some Apple. They're checking out what's on your phone. Should you be worried about it? We'll have a little debate. And we've got other stuff coming as well. And along the way, if you wouldn't mind hitting that like button, sharing the stream, that would be delightful. And if you want to send us a message, a tweet, a chat, anything, super chat, do whatever you want. We'll respond as we go. But that said, Brett, are you ready to jump into this thing?
Whether I am or not, you've been more than kind.
Nice. I like it. Okay. Oh, I gotta watch that again. Anyway, it's been a bit since we've checked in on Fox. Do any of them deserve credit for encouraging vaccination? Now, when we've given credit, it's needed to be taken away. So we're entering the danger zone here, but I am ready this morning to give some credit to Steve Ducey. Let's watch a video and see if it's merited.
I also saw that in Arkansas, apparently about 20% of the people who are in hospitals with coronavirus, 20% of them are children. So that's one of the things they're obviously going to be talking about. There are a lot of kids under 12, cannot currently be vaccinated. But if your kids are over 12, you probably ought to get the shot.
Yeah, right. See a doctor decide what you want to do. That's what usually people go to for medical advice, doctors.
I didn't go to a doctor before I got the shot.
Well, that's your decision. Your
absolutely.
That's your decision. But I don't think anchors should be recommending medical advice.
Yeah. I agree.
You know, but a lot of people have been tuning into the show for 25 years to see what we think about different things. I think if you have the opportunity, get the shot.
So, Brett, now, like I said, I'd give him credit, and people are like, no, it's too late. So many people have died. No, I'm not saying he's awesome. That's not what I'm saying at all. Obviously, he's not. But I'm saying that all of that born in mind, we've got bears in our mind. We're doing that. Right now, things are looking really dark. And that, right, that was better than the 2 seconds where Sean Hannity sounded like he cared if his audience died. That's the best, I think, right? I think Harris Faulkner did the ad where she said, get vaccinated. That's the clearest, but I don't know if they pay attention to the straight news programming. So was this the best? Does he deserve credit?
My problem is with, yeah, I have no problem with Steve Ducey. Good for Ducey. Don't drop the Ducey. That's what I say. Don't drop the Ducey. Hold the Ducey in where it is, in the foxhole. Mm-hmm. Because there's two different ways to interpret that. That's why I said it that way. I think the problem is with Kilmeade. Because Kilmeade's reason, normally when someone says consult your doctor, they mean it in a good way. Like go see the doctor, see what the doctor has to say. But that's not why Kilmeade is saying consult your doctor. He's doing that to cover his ass so that the Fox viewers don't turn on him, because that has become code for, listen, that's what Fox hosts have devised as the easiest, most convenient way for them to avoid responsibility for what they're very obviously to everybody else doing on their network, which is giving extra credence to this anti-vax nonsense. Yeah. He's saying it in line with what else happens on that network when they go to commercial break and they're like, go get Valjance, put Valjance over your body and Symbicore. Do you have a sniffle? Get Symbicore, talk to your doctor, but get Symbicore. Like that's what they're doing, and it makes total sense. At least it's consistent. It's just wildly infuriating.
Yeah, you're totally right about the ads, but also I think Ducey, he pushed back against their cowardly, well, I'm just a host, I shouldn't give advice. Which, if that was actually your position, a consistent position, sort of a core part of you as a host, then it would suck considering the stakes right now. But at least you would be consistent. They're not. Okay, they have never hesitated to give you advice about every area of your life, including in medicine. Like they were not objective and neutral and disconnected from everything when it came to hydroxychloroquine and things like that. Few on the network were. And even if they were, like we know that that is not the only way that you influence an audience, that they come out and say, do this or do this. That's not how it works. I could never tell you whether you should do a thing, but if I just do story after story about how it's bad, or how the people who are doing it are sheep, or about how patriots should have more questions than those people, I've never said what you should do, but it's clear what I think, and I'm clearly influencing you. And they do that. They do that in medicine as well as in everything else. And so at least Ducey is telling people they should get vaccinated, saying it's good for kids after. Look, let's keep it real in terms of the context. Fox and Friends has downplayed young people getting COVID as much as anyone else in this country. But he's also saying it is not wrong or weird to provide advice to people when the stakes are death.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts?
No, I agree. It's very frustrating. And that's exactly what they're doing. And what's even more frustrating, and this is something that I think I might be part of my answer on Common Room tonight. People who haven't heard the promotion of it, Fridays at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern, twitch.tv/TYT. If I could ask everybody in the world to do one thing, is just hold up a card or make a signal when you're only doing something because you're being crappy. Like, there's something that you gotta do. Like, you know, there's a thing where you say bless their heart, where it kind of indicates that you're about to crap on someone. Like, bless their heart, but they're an evil person. Can you just say, like, I'm just being a hypocrite here, but I'm going to now, like, some kind of caveat ahead of time that just indicates to me that, yes, you're just saying the next thing to either feel really good about yourself or continue a hypocritical hatred that you have to someone else when you're doing the exact same thing as them. Or in this case, like you're just trying to appease an audience that you've misled and now have no control over.
Yeah.
Like just say that. Like, I'm just here to appease you. And stroke your sad, fragile ego about this thing when you know and pass the buck along to your doctor. I mean, that's different. Yeah. And he's not doing it for like legal reasons. He's doing it for rhetorical reasons. And I'm pointing him out for it.
Yeah, exactly. And by the way, if your excuse is going to be, you know, go speak to your doctors. Okay, so you do think that medical experts' opinions matter, but only when it's a local person going to their local doctor disconnected with anything. Like they're not, what are they interviewing the head of the CDC every day? I mean, they respect doctors, so why aren't they talking to doctors? Why aren't they bringing doctors on? Why are you putting it all on your audience? When do you do that? But in this case, oh, we gotta be very careful and everything. Anyway, obviously I'm not a fan. Ducey, I look forward to you figuring out a way to make me regret everything that I've just said, probably in the next 8 hours or so. But that said, let's turn to some good news. We have been talking a lot about this upcoming wave of COVID. The numbers are rapidly rising in terms of cases and hospitalizations. Deaths are up as well. Thankfully, not proportionally to the cases yet, although they are going up. But that said, it has been depressing to cover this coming wave because it really does feel on a daily basis like none of it matters. You know, the thought leaders on the right, the unthought leaders, are not really changing their behavior aside from Ducey, I guess. And so it seems like it's wasted effort, but there is reason to believe that that is not actually the case. So recently, some of the states hardest hit by the pandemic, Alabama, Arkansas, Louisiana, Mississippi, Missouri, and Oklahoma, are administering vaccinations at a rate not seen since April, according to the head, the response coordinator for the White House COVID-19 task force. Over just the last day, there were a total of 864,000 vaccines administered, the highest since early June. During the same period, 585,000 people received their first shot. So this is not just people finishing it off. It's more than 500,000 people deciding now to finally start the process of getting vaccination. And that individual, Jeff Zients, says, for the fourth week in a row, we've increased the daily average numbers of Americans newly vaccinated. And importantly, we're seeing the most significant increases in the states with the highest case rates. Now, unfortunately, on that list, we don't see Texas, we don't see Florida, but a number of states that have very high per capita rates are starting to get vaccinated, which implies that as disconnected and frustrating as it can be, Brett, it seems like some people are paying attention.
Yes, and maybe, and I like to give people the benefit, I hate to give people the benefit of the doubt, but if I don't give them the benefit of the doubt afterwards, I don't like myself. And that's really all that matters according to my kindergarten teaching. So I wanna give people the benefit of the doubt in this situation. Maybe they're earnest when some of them say, I want the FDA approval before I do it. I don't want emergency use authorization, I want FDA approval. And then there have been reports about the coming FDA approval for a lot of these things. So if that's the case, maybe that's why people are coming around to these vaccinations. Maybe the people who said, I just wanna wait and see what it does to folks to see if there's a problem. Maybe those folks are now coming around. And then there are, but there's a lot of people, and I don't wanna forget the core of the anti-vaccine movement, which is wildly misguided. And that's how that starts. So maybe they're the remaining anchor on this. I saw something about vaccine hesitancy coinciding with the reduction of the advertisements put out by like whatever it is, the ad council to tell people to get vaccinated. I don't put much credence into that because it might just be the case that they stopped when they felt they'd reached everyone who was reachable. And then that's about when you stop advertising for something, like after the season's over. And then maybe they just cut their losses and the only remaining people are vaccine hesitant. Everyone else has already gotten it. So it's not like, so yeah, that's one thing.
Can I ask you a question?
No.
You know,
one other thing. Move on. I'm going to let it go.
They keep saying it's not FDA approved, even though emergency approval has been given. So supposedly we are not far away from the actual approval for one or all of these vaccines. So all of those who've said, I'm not gonna take something that's not FDA approved, what percentage do you think are going to feel good and confident as a result of FDA approval finally coming?
My earnest response is a percentage. A number, and that number I will respect for being at least consistent. Yeah. And the rest will, as they always tend to do, click or either shift conveniently to some new justification for doing the thing they were always already going to do anyway, and never acknowledge that that's what they did.
Yeah. I fear that too. I wonder what the number is though. Can't wait to find out. Anyway, let's move on to other news. Sparks continue to fly over at Fox over whether, not whether you should advocate for people to take the pandemic seriously, but even if you acknowledge how bad it is. And look, you go to war with the army you've got, the champions you've got, and I guess the champion we've got is Geraldo Rivera. So we want to show you a recent blow up that happened between him and Dan Bongino about how bad Florida is experiencing the pandemic right now.
Tuesday in Florida, there were over 16,000 new COVID infections. Yesterday, Wednesday in Florida, there were nearly 17,000 new.
Sean, DeSantis saved every older person. He used every state agency. No, this is not bash Ron DeSantis.
Dan. Geraldo doesn't know about Ron DeSantis. He doesn't know the numbers. I live here. Florida's 26th in COVID deaths per 100.
Dan, it's Dan.
Geraldo, it's not my fault. You never know what you're talking about. It's not my fault that you never research anything before you come on the air.
You are so full of it. You know, that's why I hate coming on with you.
Folks, please look it up to prove how silly this guy is.
You're a backstabbing cheap shot. Geraldo, let Dan talk.
Geraldo.
Dan.
He doesn't like to do that, Sean, because he always gets caught never knowing what he's talking about.
Stick to the facts.
And he's embarrassed.
Stick to the story.
And his position on the border. I did stick to the facts.
I'm embarrassed to be on this air with you. That's why I'm embarrassed.
You never know them. And then you, it's unbelievable. And your position on the border.
Do you want to bet me $1,000? You want to bet $1,000? You want to bet at that? You want to put your money where your mouth is? You want to put your money where your mouth is?
Love to have a democracy. Anyway, I don't know that Dan Bongino ever agreed to that bet, but he was at the very least saying that Geraldo was wrong. Not just that he was wrong, he's wrong because he refuses to do his research, implying that other people do their research and know what's up. So, Brett, how do you think this story ends about the facts that Geraldo was talking about there?
Well, if it's like all the times that Geraldo told me the paternity of a child during his talk show, then I think it ends with Geraldo bringing the facts and having been accurate.
It turns out you're right, and Florida is the father of a pandemic. So he tweeted, Tuesday, Florida suffered over 17,000 new COVID cases. On Wednesday, another 17,000 new cases. I was right. Dan Bongino, as usual, was full of blank. And he owes me $1,000. Speaking of bull blank, popular Governor Ron DeSantis better stop gaslighting and pay attention to his afflicted state. So let's bring up more information about the way Florida is going, because it's even worse than it was when he argued with that gym sock on air. We've got 18,121 cases yesterday. That's more than doubled from 2 weeks ago. Hospitalizations are up 116%, breaking records every day. Deaths have more than doubled, still low, thankfully, because they are right about one thing. Most older people in Florida have gotten vaccinated. But Sean Hannity's like desire to say that that's Ron DeSantis descended from the heavens and made sure that everyone took vaccination seriously has less to do with DeSantis's actual performance and more to do with the fact that I think Sean Hannity is looking to be influential in some future Ron DeSantis candidacy for the presidency.
Yeah, I my favorite stuff about Ron DeSantis is when he goes out there and he's like, we haven't had a single, first of all, he looks like a my buddy. Did I say this last week? Ron DeSantis is a plush toy. He looks like a plush toy of a child. He's like a mix between a grown up. He's the grown up child actor who played a plush toy. You know, he's just like kind of overstuffed and he tries to be tough. Like but he's still got trappings of what it was like to be like, you know, a really, really important young man.
Is he the beaver?
He tried to spike the football the other day of saying, I don't want to hear a blip out of Joe Biden.
It's like Ted Cruz being tough.
Yeah, exactly. No tough guy says the word blip. I don't hear a blip out of you. He's bad.
Did I sound tough when I said bull blank?
Yes.
But few can.
I don't know how does he do it? But I just want to say this. The tap dancing BS, like trying to dance between the raindrops on COVID that Ron DeSantis has been doing is absolute theater, and none of it bears out in reality. He tries to claim credit for not having mask mandates when right now Orange County, Broward County, Miami-Dade County, these are millions and millions of Floridians who have a mask mandate. So it happens. So those mask mandates are contributing to any kind of fight being put up against COVID. And this guy will claim credit for it in the long run.
Yeah.
And then he'll do this kind of weird thing where he's like, I'm all for it. I'm doing things to stop the spread. You'll hear Bongino jump in and be like, for the old people, he's protected some old people by using a state agency. But in his own logic, using any state agency is a bad thing. Keep the government out. And then he just tries to flex and be strong when he gets called out and do an impression of Trump, which he can't because he's still that, like, he's got too much Nerf inside him. He's a Nerf governor.
Nerf it. And as they said, they said that they're 26th in deaths. I will assume that is true. First of all, that's a weird thing to brag about. So you're narrowly in the bottom half. And second of all, like, we can look at your position and you can then try to say, and thus you can't say anything about Ron DeSantis. I can say, okay, well, you ended up in the middle of the pack. And by the way, big state, big population, which means middle of the pack means a lot of deaths. I could say, and so what if you had taken it seriously, which you very much did not? You got the benefit of the fact that a lot of cities had limited lockdowns, as Brett said, mask mandates, things like that. You sort of skated by on refusing to actually be a leader there because you didn't want to offend right wingers. You didn't want to be seen to be taking it more seriously than Trump was. So would you have been 26th if you had actually had a spine? I almost said something else. If you'd actually had a spine, probably not. You probably would have done better. And that could have resulted in thousands of Floridians not dying. Now, really fast, I want to show you one other thing though. So Florida's obviously really rough. Let's go to this vaccination graphic. You can see 80% of seniors in Florida are vaccinated. That is good, but still. So you're 1 out of 5, like 6 months into this, more than 6 months, 1 out of 5 still aren't vaccinated. And they're getting all these bad cases with half of the state vaccinated, and that really tells you how bad, how transmissible this is for people who are not vaccinated. But that said, if you want to see where it's doing really bad, let's take a look at this next graphic. It shows a regional breakdown for cases, and then it breaks out Louisiana. Louisiana, in the last 7 days, has had higher per capita COVID cases than ever before in the pandemic that we've seen. It is doing terribly. And that's the place, by the way, you remember that video we showed you yesterday of Marjorie Greene saying, that they're the least vaccinated, and everyone's like, woo! Well, that's how you get that. You get a chart like that when you're the least vaccinated. Anyway, any final thoughts, Brett, in this story?
I haven't had a thought since this show started. So I haven't had an initial.
I appreciate you still pushing through and talking though.
Yeah,
but anyway. Pleasure. Okay. So with that, we are going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to check in with the Olympics. Some crazy stuff has been going on, and we'll break it down after this. Anyway, Brett, ready to talk some Olympics? Have you been watching the Olympics at all?
No, I haven't. I know what happens in them. John, I think we need to invent new sports because only recently I don't know, something about this go around, I haven't really been as titillated as normal with the sporting. Every 4 years, I'll be like, I'll watch diving.
Yeah.
They added this year, I'm like, I don't.
Sports. That's not good enough.
I am 39 years old. I've seen a lot of summers Olympic, and I haven't gotten any better at looking at how big a splash is and going, that was a better dive.
Yeah. So, look, you don't watch gymnastics? That's what I'm getting to with this. You don't watch.
No, I don't watch gymnastics.
Okay, well, I'm done with you.
All right, dude.
Anyway, maybe what the Olympics needs, Brett, isn't new sports, but drama, international drama, like a 24 situation. Well, I've got that for you. I also have a really smooth transition for you. And we're in the middle of it. And I lost it. Anyway, let's talk about it now. I want to give you some updates on a story originally talked about last week, and that has to do with a Belarusian Olympian named Kristina Simonuskaya, I believe it is, Brett. I'm not sure if you have a better pronunciation on that, but we knew that she was seeking not to return home after criticizing those in charge of her team and believing that she was under threat as a result of it. Well, we have a lot more information about the form that those threats came in, and this is really scary, dark stuff, so bear that in mind, but fascinating that something like this would be happening at the Olympics. So a reported recording has emerged of her speaking with two of those in charge of the team, and we're gonna give you some quotes from it. But what we do know is that not long after the conversation we're about to show you, the sprinter fled into the arms of police at Tokyo Airport. Belarusian officials were trying to force her back onto a flight to Minsk. On Wednesday, after 2 days holed up at the Polish embassy in Tokyo, she was back at Narita to take a flight to a life of exile in Europe, which we'll give you updates on. So she is now, at least for now, safe. But the feud, I want to catch you up, began when the 24-year-old runner, who thought that she had entered only into the 200 meters race in Tokyo, discovered that she had been put down for the 4x100 without anyone from the team consulting with her. Fearing disruption to her medal chances in her main event, she posted a video on Instagram criticizing the team's coaches. Now, she quickly took that down, and notably, she never criticized the country or the regime or anything like that. But that said, the two men, this is Belarusian chief athletics coach Yuri Moisevich and Artur Shumak, came and spoke to her about the criticism. According to the transcript of that recording, the two men first try to reassure her that if she comes home without a fuss, all will be fine, that it will be forgotten as a youthful indiscretion, and she will be able to resume her athletic career. She says on the transcript, "I think this won't end well for me." Okay, so we're gonna get to more, and the threats become more explicit and as dark as anything I can imagine. But first of all, Brett, what do you think about that?
I mean, anytime you have a story about the Olympics and you start asking questions about it, it's not too dissimilar from the NFL, where you start the thing that was designed originally to just be some happy escape, where people who otherwise hate each other would put those discrepancies aside, end their feuds and move on, now is causing you more stress because now you know anything about the corrupt and horrifying underpinnings of the institution.
Yeah.
And this is one of those where every time when Simone Biles said that she was gonna kind of step out, I was like, come on, buck up. And then people are like, she won gold medals with broken toes. And other people, when you're hearing about 80s gymnasts who were forced to perform even though they knew they would hurt themselves and ended up hurting themselves because they had the twisties or whatever affliction, they were just told to power through.
Yeah.
To the detriment of their team. Like, then I realized, oh gosh, I can find other things that can make me happy. I can watch reruns of Jeopardy and be happy. You know what I mean? I can watch old clips of the Olympics and someone could tell me this is for, I watched a Katie Ledecky race and was over the moon about it. And then later someone was like, yeah, that was from Rio. And I was like, it was still fun to watch.
Yeah. Well, I'm gonna give you something that might not be fun to watch, but you do need to know it. It does get dark. Someone in the chat was like, it's a nice family you got there. That's sort of the fear here. But anyway, here is what happened. Team officials warned her that if she did not go back, then everyone will suffer. The entire team could be ruined, with Shumak saying, through your stupidity, you could end up destroying people's lives. Again, because she put up an Instagram video criticizing the coaches. Here is what Moisevich said. Humility makes a person. Get over this. Put aside your pride. Your pride will tell you, don't do it. You've got to be kidding. And it will start pulling you into the devil's vortex and twisting you. That's how suicide cases end up, unfortunately. The devil grabs them and says, you have to prove it to somebody, so jump from a balcony. Oh, how they'll tear out their hair and later lament that they drove you to it. And you know what's the funniest thing? The people will say, well, that idiot could have lived, She didn't prove anything to anyone.
That's not about it. That's not how any of that goes.
That's crazy in a lot of ways. And that is, that's just a gilded, we're gonna kill you and we're gonna make it look like suicide.
Yeah.
Because this sprinter criticized them. She just wanted to run 200 meters as fast as she could. And they're threatening to push her from a balcony, which, by the way, I mean, there's a lot of people who have jumped off balconies over the past 5 years or so, suspiciously. But anyway, they're threatening to make her the latest to do that. And so I can only imagine how terrified she was going to that airport, apparently realizing that she could make it to the police and they didn't realize it. So that was the only thing that saved her, was that she made it to Tokyo police and went into protective custody, because she was terrified that if she went back, the best case scenario would be that she would be institutionalized for the rest of her life. Worst case scenario was that there wouldn't be much of the rest of her life there.
And how about this? It seems like, there is a fine line between being on an Olympic team and kind of being forced into labor. You know, there is, once she's in that situation, and this underscores it, like people hyperbolize and say, seem to be hyperbolizing when they say, listen, you give your whole life to this thing, it's no longer for you, you're doing something for the country and there's a bunch of pressures from everyone. This is pressure of life and death, and we're gonna like really hurt your family. And add to that, what a lot of people do in order to get into the reason that they get into the Olympics is to get something better for their family. Yeah. To get a better life. And because she wanted to do better in her chosen event, and they forced her to do otherwise, in her opinion, in what I would consider an expert opinion, to the detriment of everything else, of her country and her team. At the end of it, it's gonna make life much, much worse for her. Yeah. Even if she does do the thing that ends up being better for her, which is not going back to her country.
Definitely not. Yeah. I want to give you a couple more quotes from her because I'm incredibly brave, want to give her the credit. First of all, a reminder, totally unrelated. NGO chief in Belarus found hanged in Ukraine was a story from a few days ago. Just putting that out there. As of, I believe it was yesterday, Christina had an interview. She said, grandmother called me when they were already driving me to the airport. I had some 10 seconds. She called me. All that she told me was, please do not come back to Belarus. It's not safe. She went on to say, they did not expect that in the airport I can approach the police. They think that we are scared to make a move, that we are afraid to speak, afraid to tell the truth to the whole world, but I am not afraid. Although I would have been. But anyway, she did make it on a plane eventually going to Vienna. It is believed that she will eventually make it to Poland. She was originally going to go directly there, but they were worried that the plane would be routed to Belarus, as another was not that long ago. Obviously, I mean, I'm sure she's terrified for her family that remains in that country. It's just devastating. As someone pointed out on Twitch, looking forward to Tucker Carlson's week of programming in Belarus soon. But anyway, yeah, just terrified. You don't expect anything like this from the Olympics. But we have a country filled with broken, corrupt, despotic regimes, and they ruin everything. Anywho, okay, well, it looks like I'm being asked to go to the second break. I love the thematic block, but it looks like we're gonna have to break it up. Anyway, we are gonna go to a short break. We come back, a bit of good news coming out of the Olympics after this. Anyway, okay, with that, we do have a little bit more on the Olympics. Why don't we jump into that? We've got some good news out of the Olympics. Well, good news for most people. For some, they're going to grant that they're going to greet this news as the apocalypse that they've seen coming. And that is that a Canadian football player is set to become the first openly trans athlete to receive an Olympic medal. And I believe it's gold. I think it's set that it is going to be gold. So this is the athlete is Quinn, who goes by just one name. It says, as of this, will either win gold or silver. I believe it is gold after Canada beat the US women's national team in the semifinals. Last year, the 25-year-old publicly announced they are transgender, non-binary, and would use they, them pronouns. This is a midfielder who has played for the national team since the age of 16. Imagine being a 16-year-old representing your whole country in competitions like this. But anyway, has previously spoken about the importance of LGBTQ representation within sports. Quinn said, athletics is the most exciting part of my life and it brings me the most joy. If I can allow kids to play the sports they love, that's my legacy and that's what I'm here for. And you can see a picture of Quinn there. We'll have a little bit more, but so I know that this has been one of the few things about the Olympics that a lot of right wingers have really gotten fired up about is how dare they allow trans athletes. And as of this Olympics, which has had a lot of records set and first set, we've acknowledged many on the show, Brett, Quinn becoming the first openly trans athlete to get a medal and to get a gold at that.
No, I'm against it because someone on Fox told me to hate those things. Congratulations to Quinn on, spoiler alert, clinching the gold medal.
Hey, I have all the gymnastics events spoiled, so now I'm just gonna spoil everything. I don't care.
Cool. That makes sense. You're a damaged soul.
Good person.
pay it forward, John. I don't know what anyone's complaining about. This is not the exact. I love the like. Well, is what's the specifics of their transitness? Is it biologically born a woman, and now is I? You know, you're not going to hear a lot of complaining from the right wing, I don't think, on this, because they'll be like, at least they were born biologically female. That's it.
I have no idea what they're going
to
say.
It's very difficult to win a gold medal. It's a team sport, and congratulations.
Yeah, so Northern Ice Dragon says, Quinn didn't do it alone. They were part of a team. I get that. the team is awesome. Congratulations to the Canadian team. Yes. Thank you to the team.
The fact that any soccer team can score goals, congratulations.
You have to run so far to score a goal. I don't think it's worth it, honestly. But this is good. And yeah, so I just wanted to get out a little bit of that positivity. It's awesome for Quinn and for the rest of the team. Congratulations to, I'm going to say, US got silver, right? I think so.
No, we got bronze.
We got bronze. Oh yeah, still that's still good. Good. And anyway, now we're going to enter into the Daily Wire just erased their whole rundown. They've wiped the whiteboard clear. It's just this for the next week. Those people who are so tired of leftists getting triggered by things and losing their mind and being too sensitive, their entire reality is melting down around them right now because Quinn is gonna get a gold. And isn't this like, I'm gonna read a message for you, and I have a point. So this is a message from Quinn saying, coming out is hard and kind of BS. I know for me, it's something I'll be doing over again for the rest of my life. As I've lived as an openly trans person with the people I love most for many years, I did always wonder when I'd come out publicly. Instagram is a weird space. I wanted to encapsulate the feelings I had towards my trans identity in one post. But that's really not why anyone is on here, including myself. So that post and the previous comments about representation, wanting to be a good role model, the difficulty of coming out, caring about your feelings and acknowledging them, that's getting dangerously close to woke territory. And I was told that wokesters lose, woke makes you lose, you can't win. That's what they've been saying. And this incredibly woke team just got gold. Weird.
Gross. Canada. That's what we all should be upset about. I want them to be disqualified so we can get silver. And that's what the Olympics is all about.
Yeah.
Disqualifying people. Dude, my friend was like on the track to become an Olympian, and he went to like for America and went to like a training place in Lake Placid, New York. And when he got there, he was like 8 in whatever sport. And then there was a doctor who's like, hey, I can help you out. And he said, no. Apparently a lot of other people said yes, because like in a week he was like 20th in Bob's whatever, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
The sport.
Yeah. Anyway, let's really fast before we move on to our last story. I do want to acknowledge there has been other history-making trans athletes at this year's games. So earlier this week, Laurel Hubbard made history as one of the first openly trans athletes to compete in the games, but exited the games after she failed to register a successful lift. Laurel had been competing for New Zealand in the 87 kilogram weightlifting category in Tokyo. This is beyond my knowledge of both the sport and the metric system, but she failed to lift 120 kilograms in two failed attempts at 125 kilograms, which I'm doing quick math in my head. That's a lot. So, you know, I watched the response on the right to that as they were so mad that Laurel was competing at all. And then when Laurel failed to win, which they always predicted would be the inevitable conclusion of all of this, is that you would only ever have trans athletes winning because they're cheating. That's what they say. Then said, like, there were posts from some, you know, right wing pundits that have like a million followers that was just laughing at Laurel, saying they cheated and they lost. So it doesn't matter if you do well or don't do well, they're gonna find a way to make you the villain and them the awesome superior people in this.
That I think that is one of the central themes of the last 10, probably at least 5 years, is that. It doesn't matter what happened or what my logic indicates I would conclude. I just want to feel a certain way. And I'm going to do whatever it takes to feel like I've satisfied at least this very low bar I've set. And sometimes not at all for what is a good justification for me feeling that way at someone else's expense.
Yeah, 100%. Okay, we're gonna go on to a very different story. But before we do that, I wanna remind you that while there's a lot of awesome content coming up, and we'll talk more about that in a little bit, what you should be preparing for right now, coming up in not that much longer, something like 40 minutes, is Indisputable over at youtube.com/IndisputableTYT. You've got Rashad Ritchie, probably fresh off the high of Dr. Rashad Ritchie Day being declared in his state. How awesome is that? He's gonna be going live with Wozni Lambre as his co-host. Charles Love will be coming on for a debate, so that should be a lot of fun. It's coming up in not that long. I mentioned, I think it was in Brett, I think it was in our production meeting for TDR, that I'm doing a rewatch of Frasier, and there's this whole episode about Frasier Crane Day being declared. So like Rashad is at Frasier level, basically. That's how I would put it and will put it from now on. Dr. Rashad Ritchie is basically, for political commentary, Dr. Frasier Crane. So
it's amazing. Yeah. Do a rewatch of Indisputable too.
I will. And do a watch of Indisputable today.
Yep.
Okay, with that, why don't we jump into this last story? We got a few minutes, I think we can do it. Right now, California and the rest of the US and the rest of the world are experiencing a lot of devastating wildfires. We're gonna talk about a bunch of them, but we wanna focus on one, and that is the rapidly growing Dixie Fire, which increased in size last night and now covers over 400,000 acres. It grew by 110 square miles last night alone. That's a lot of territory in one transition from Thursday night to Friday morning, making the blaze the largest wildfire currently raging in the entire country. It has already consumed 433,000 acres. That's 71,000 acres in one day. The Bootleg Fire in Oregon had previously been the nation's largest active wildfire at 413,000 acres. So a lot of competition. The horse race is getting really exciting in the fires, but obviously we're joking. It's devastating. The fire right now is only 35% contained, expected to still grow. We talked about it yesterday briefly and mentioned that at that point, it was the sixth largest wildfire in California history. It moved up to third overnight. That is just devastating. And obviously there are many. I mean, we're gonna bring up a picture right now. You can see what this individual 400,000 acre fire is. And you'll also see that there's a ton. But Brett, this is what our state looks like. I mean, it's Northern California. You know, we're not really close to it or anything like that, but this is devastating. It's not impossible that it could become the second or largest ever in state history.
Yeah. At least I have the Bootleg and the Dixie. I boxed that exacta. So whether it's one and two or the two and one, I still you know, get the return on the bet. Like I still win that bet. You have to mm-hmm. bet twice as much, but at least I'm the winner as all the wildlife and people over there utterly lose. And yeah, that feature on Google Maps is just in Google Maps. Like you don't have to be looking for wildfires. If you are looking on, I was like, where is this city? And I just tried to find it and you zoom out and it's like, here is a wildfire. Here's a giant wildfire just off to the side. It is difficult and I've lived in California all my life. And as a result, like we always have some kind of fire danger, but as evidenced by the size and the record-breaking nature every single year, you can feel, and it's true that things are getting worse. And there's stuff that we need to do. And I think that stuff, I speak for all of us, is just rake the ground.
I think it's been really irresponsible that they refused to do that. We were given that advice and we regrettably did not act on it.
Been rakish for years, but I never thought to rake the ground.
Yes. But anyway, so the conditions that led to this that we can potentially do something about, although it's a little bit more complicated than raking the woods. The timber, grass and brush in the area was described as so dry that one fire official described it as basically near combustion. Like he thought it was so dry that it might burst into fire itself. And so, yeah, when you have a state and a country and eventually a world that's basically about to spontaneously combust, fires will spread rapidly. Now, I want to zoom out a little bit just for a minute. Let's take a look at the Pacific Northwest and some of the surrounding states. You'll be able to see the Dixie Fire there and so many others, the Cedar Creek Fire, South Yak, Thorn Creek, the Bootleg Fire, the Monument Fire. I mean, it's all over the place. And I also, you know, we don't have time today for a meanwhile in, but if we did, we would talk in depth about the fact that the Mediterranean is on fire as well. It's become a recent wildfire hotspot with Turkey being hit by its most intense blazes on record and a heat wave producing a high risk of further fires and smoke pollution around the entire Mediterranean. Greece has something like 100 wildfires burning right now. Italy is experiencing fire as well. This is, I guess, a little bit less shocking than, you know, when the Arctic was and still is on fire. But yeah, it's all over Western America. It's around the Mediterranean. Everything seems to be on fire and we're really not acting like it.
Yep. It's a great image. People talk about like, oh, run around with your hair on fire. Mm-hmm. And the reaction that you get from a lot of people, it is also one of those like, the numbers get so big that it no longer registers as an increase. Yeah. We just experienced that a lot with COVID. You're just like, yes, it is bad. Good point. And I don't know how to fathom it. I don't know what 100,000 acres overnight is like. I can't fathom 100,000 acres. Like how much, it's what, 40,000 square feet. So it's like a small, it's like a half of a block. 100,000 times.
And a few hours. No, I can't conceive of it either. But anyway, I think we have time really fast. I want to go to this video because let's go really fast. The drought. Let's talk about it.
The Alegria Inn now pays to truck in water so guests can take a shower.
Right now, it costs $600 for 3,500 gallons.
And that lasts you about a week, you're saying?
That's lasting us a week.
To conserve, they douse flowers with dirty dishwater and bought lightweight sheets for guest beds.
You can get more of them into one load of wash, and you can cut your water use significantly.
Most people across the United States cannot imagine a situation where they turn on the tap and no water comes out.
Yeah, it's frightening. There's a scenario here where people will run out of water.
Yeah, so look, sometimes it causes fires, sometimes it causes situations like this. People, they're saying people can't imagine it. Well, yeah, let's fast forward a few years and see if more people across more states are gonna be able to fathom it at that point. But remember, this is going on with the backdrop of the fight over the infrastructure bill. Are they gonna do something about the climate? We're being told by multiple senators that we can't afford it. Inflation's a bigger threat. I want you to bear in mind what's going on right now in California and in other states throughout the region. Unfortunately, that is all the time we have for this first hour. So if you're on one of our linear platforms, thank you so much for watching. We really do appreciate the support. But if you're watching on Twitch or on YouTube, we've got a lot more news as well as our garbage people of the week. So stay tuned. You can find out who those are after this. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.